Business Adventures, 12 Classic Tales from the World of Wall Street, author John Brooks. Some tales are time-bound, that is, they apply only to the period of time in which they occurred. Other tales are timeless in the lessons derived from them and the valuable at all times. Our tales here belong to that of the latter category, where stories of loss and gain and unforeseen failure and unprecedented success, of hasty moves that backfired in the world of business decades ago can still inspire the do's and don'ts of business today. Ford and Xerox are the protagonists of our section from Tales of John Brooks' Business Adventures. Ford. The year of the automobile, but not for Ford. In 1955, which was the year of the automobile in America, the Ford Motor Company decided to produce a new automobile in what was quaintly called the medium price range, and went ahead and designed it more or less in conformity with the fashion of the day. 2 years later, the Ford Company put its new car, the Edsel, on the market, to the accompaniment of more fanfare that has attended to the arrival of any other new car since the same company's Model A, brought out 30 years earlier. Ford counted on selling at least 200,000 Edsels of the first year. 2 years, 2 months and 15 days later, Ford had only sold 109,466 Edsels. On November the 19th, 1959, having lost around $350 million on the Edsel, the Ford Company permanently discontinued its production. The elements of a fiasco. How could this have happened? The Edsel was designed, named, advertised and promoted with a slavish adherence to the results of public opinion polls and motivational research. And usually when the public is wooed in an excessively calculated manner, it tends to turn away in favour of some gruffer but more spontaneous attentive suitor. But in that plausible explanation, we doubt. There are more elements to this fiasco. Although the Edsel was supposed to be advertised and promoted strictly on the basis of preferences expressed in polls, some old-fashioned methods, intuitive rather than scientific, crept in. Although it's supposed to have been named in much the same way, science was curtly discarded at the last minute and the Edsel was named for the father of the company's president, like a 19th century brand of cough drops. As for the design, it was arrived at without even the pretense of consulting the polls, and by the method that had been standard for years of designing automobiles, that of simply pooling the hunches of sundry companies' committees. The disaster of a time lag. One of the most persuasive and most frequently cited explanations of the Edsel's failure was that it was a victim of the time lag between the decision to produce it, 1950, and the act of putting it in the market, 1957. It was easy to see a few years later when smaller and less powerful cars, enthusiastically called compacts, had become so popular as to turn old multimobile status ladder upside down, that the Edsel was a giant step in the wrong direction. And Ford goes on. The obvious point in the Edsel story is the defeat of a giant motor company. But what it was just as surprising is that the giant did not come apart or even get seriously hurt in the fall. And neither did the majority of the people who went down with him. Owing largely to the success of its four other cars, the Thunderbird, the Small Falcon, the Hornet and the Mustang, the Ford Company as an investment survived gloriously. Xerox, a time of need. The 1950s were the pioneering years of mechanized office copying. Within a short time, there suddenly appeared on the market a whole batch of devices capable of reproducing most office papers without the use of a master page, at a cost of only a few cents per copy, and within a time span of a minute or less per copy. However, all these pioneering copying machines had serious and frustrating inherent defects. What was needed was a technological breakthrough, and the breakthrough came through at the turn of the decade with the advent of a machine that worked on a new principle, known as xerography, and it was able to make dry, good quality permanent copies in ordinary paper with a minimum of trouble. The company responsible for the great breakthrough, and one of those whose machines the majority of the billions of copies was made on, was of course the Xerox Corporation. As a result, it became the most spectacular big business success of the 1960s. The Halloyd Company started in Rochester in 1906, and he was the grandfather of Xerox. Halloyd manufactured photographic papers, and like all photographic companies, it lived in the giant shadow of its neighbour, Eastman Kodak. In the years immediately after the Second World War, however, both competition and labour costs increased, sending Haloid on a search for new products. One of the possibilities and scientists hit upon was copying a process that was being worked on for the Battelle Memorial Institute, a large non-profit industrial research organisation in Columbus, Ohio. An obscure inventor. In 1938, a second-floor kitchen in Astoria, Queens, was being used as a makeshift laboratory by an obscure 32-year-old inventor named Chester F. Carlson, in cooperation with a German refugee for scientist Otto Connelly. Carlson invented the process, which he called electrophotography. In 1944, Carlson persuaded Battelle Memorial Institute to undertake further development work on his process, in exchange for 3/4 of any royalties that might accrue from its sale or license. By 1946, Haloid obtained the rights to Carlson's process in exchange for royalties to Carlson and Battelle, and committing it to share with Battelle in the work and the cost of development. Everything else, it seemed, flowed from that agreement in 1948. A Battelle man got together with a professor of classical languages at Ohio State University, and by combining 2 words from classical Greek, they came up with xerography, or dry writing. In 1955, a new agreement was drawn up, under which Haloid took over full title to the Carlson patents and the full cost of the development project, in payment for which it issued huge bundles of Haloid shares to the Battelle, which in turn issued a bundle or two to Carlson, and the cost was staggering. Between 1947 and 1960, Haloid spent about $75 million on research in xerography. In trouble, the rise of adversaries. In the fall of 1966, Xerox began encountering a measure of adversity for the first time since its introduction of xerography. By that time, there were more than 40 companies in the office copier business, many of them producing xerographic devices under licenses from Xerox. The great advantage that Xerox had been enjoying was one of the first to enter a new field of always enjoys, the advantage of charging high prices. Cut-rate latecomers were swarming into copying. One company, in a letter sent to one of its stockholders in May, foresaw a time when a copier, selling for $10 or $20, could be marketed as a toy, and that there was even talk of the day when copiers would be given away to promote sales of paper. For some years, realizing that its cozy little monopoly would eventually pass into public domain, Xerox had been widening its interests through mergers and companies in other fields, mainly publishing and education. But these moves were failed to reassure that dogmatic critic the marketplace, and Xerox stock ran into a spell of heavy weather. Times change, but not the lessons. It certainly is true that many of the particulars of business have changed, but the fundamentals have not. The stories in this summary are just as relevant now as they were back then, and the lessons learned still apply today. Each story presents people who work together, make decisions under pressure, and either succeed or fail to achieve challenging goals. That's what business is all about, in all times and ages.